Hello, friends, and from the United States, happy Thanksgiving. I'm here in the Los Angeles area, in Glendale, California, at my daughter's house where we have celebrated the Thanksgiving, and there seem to be more of us than usual. Now, you may notice a little character here, not so little, really, that's to my right. Now, this particular rather large animal, and I mean large, my friend, belongs to my grandson, who has Leo rising. A bunch of Leo in my family. And so far, I've been taking over his room, but this particular lion refuses to vacate. So I've been sleeping with this lion for a couple, three nights, and so far there have been no major casualties on either side. I think this is my method of learning fearlessness, and this is one big lion. If I was to show you how big this really is, but I think you can imagine. So maybe he and I are going to have something to do with leading this glamour webinar about fearlessness or fear and fearlessness. Livy can't be with us tonight. I think Tuya will be with us very shortly. Whereas I'm liable to change my expression quite a bit, this lion is very stoic, and he tends not to change his expression. So we just have to bear with him. Well, it's Thanksgiving here, and of course it's not a holiday that is so celebrated in other countries. It's a pretty American thing, and maybe other countries have their version of it, and I don't expect that there are a lot of Americans here tonight. I see a couple who have joined us, and I'm grateful for your presence because it is late here. Here it's 9 o'clock in LA, and if we go out to the East Coast, it's midnight, and if we go into South America, it's going to be like 2 o'clock in the morning, and in London, it's 5 o'clock a.m., and as we move towards Central Europe and Eastern Europe, it becomes maybe a little more doable, and of course, it's quite doable if you're in Australia and New Zealand. So just very glad to have you with us here. And as I say, we're dealing with fearlessness, okay, and fear in general. The lion stands for courage. Of course, I cannot claim that all of this was wonderfully thought out and that the lion was here to represent courage. He was just here. So I thought we could both give the webinar a little bit, and you will tolerate his presence. So there are, you know, I don't know how many of us, maybe 18 of us or something like that, almost 20 of us. It'll grow a little bit, and Atuya has joined us, and she has Leo rising too, and my grandson has Leo rising, and my daughter has Leo rising, and just one of those signs that seems to run in the family. So anyway, the lion is such a magnificent creature, and we have to put our thoughts contrary to the chance that the present administration will now allow trophy hunting once again, lions and elephants and their trophy remains to be brought into this country as if we have no respect for these majestic beasts. Yeah, there are no true first-rate animals anymore at this time, says the Tibetan. You know, maybe when we're looking at some of the dinosaurs, they were more the first-rate animals. And it depends on whether you believe Blavatsky or not about giantism. The earlier type of human being was a huge specimen, and the animals were lesser than he. This is a being that could tower 60 feet high or more, and in Atlantean days, 30 feet high, you know, and so there's been a gradual diminution of height in the human being to the point where Madame Blavatsky is calling us all pygmies, you know, so, but it's going to turn around and reverse itself, and we won't necessarily regain that huge stature, but I think we're on our way back to a certain elevation. Anyway, it cannot be allowed that these magnificent elephants that are head of the, really in the way, the whole second-ray kingdom, you know, they have a combination of the first and second ray, it cannot be allowed that they are hunted for their tusks and for their tails. I mean, it's just, you know, sickening, and that type of consciousness must go. And the same is true for the mighty lion. You know, we anybody who has to prove his manhood or his power against such beasts, armed as he is with high-powered rifles, had better go to some mental institution and take some time off to discover what it means to be a human being. So don't get me started. It's just despicable. But anyway, we can work on that interiorly. It's a crisis. And a lot of gains had been made until the general trend to drag the world back under the influence of the Black Lodge began to manifest itself. Now, we're going to be dealing today with a type of fear which has to do with occult attacks. He doesn't say so much, but he says enough. And, you know, he also tells somewhere, I went looking for it, that a lot of people imagine they're under some kind of occult attack, when in fact they're not. It's just the general glamorous situation to which they are succumbing. But it's true that as the disciple becomes more important, more able to accomplish real service, there can be occult attacks from the other side. And like DK said to one of his students, RSW, he said, well, look, I could protect you from all of this, but then you would learn nothing. And, you know, so it's something that we have to put up with and learn how to defend ourselves. What Master Moria said about obsession is, as if you've got a really open heart center, then the dark obsessors cannot make their way into your energy system. So I that really caught my attention, and I saw what a great prophylactic, what a great defense the open heart is, really, against these beings who have will and intelligence, but at this point, at least, no love. So we have our work cut out for us in every respect behind the scenes. And Tuya was telling me earlier, we had been discussing it, about the type of fearlessness that is required of those who venture into the occult field. You know, in a way, you don't know what you're getting into. It's a lot more serious and a lot more subtle than we can imagine. I mean, don't expect these beings to you know, start declaring themselves like, I'm a member of the Black Lodge and I'm attacking you. No, it's much more subtle than that, and they find your vulnerabilities, and then they do things which are very, very, very. Oh, my audio connection has been lost and restored. Okay, well, the recording will be there, and I trust that it's okay. I'm on a different kind of system here, and it's not the best, but I'll try to get through to everybody. So anyway, here we are, and with important things to think about on this Thanksgiving Day. And here's the thing about Thanksgiving. Master Moria says that with gratitude, there are the best fires. He's always talking about fire. You know, he's very much identified with Aries and Leo and fire in general. And he says the fires of gratitude are among the best, even the highest fires. And, you know, when you go through one of these days here in the United States, or if you're an expatriate or whatever, and you're celebrating this National Day of Thanks or International Day of Thanks for some people, you think about gratitude and you think about what you are really grateful for, you know. One can almost pause with that.
Michael.
Yep. Am I lost? Yep. Brett, go ahead.
Michael,
Yes,
we're
yes.
having trouble picking you up. I would suggest that you turn your camera off so that the upload bay might really handle it.
All right, let's see if is that going to help any so far? Is that helping at all? Is that helping? I think I have a problem.
So far.
Basically, I have a problem with the strength of the signal, which is
No.
not very good. Not very good. Okay. So, do you hear me, Brett, at all?
It might be better. Yes.
We just don't know, right? Okay, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Right.
The fires of gratitude. Maybe I make myself a little stronger here. And you know, when you felt gratitude, something really happens to your heart. And you know, it's an energy you can feel going all through your system. So just pause for a moment, you know, and think about what it is for which you are really grateful. Let's just pause for a moment. You know, there's so many things to be grateful about, and I'm sure we each, you know, we each have our list. And for me, when I think about the tremendous work of Master Moria and Master KH, yes, and Master DK, and so far cooperating to give us the two installments of the line of teaching that went through Blavatsky and Bailey, and then the Agni Yoga books through Rorick, and this tremendous insight into the subtle worlds. I feel immense gratitude because it has changed my life and the life of many I know. But remember, the best fires are found with gratitude. So it's an affirmation of all that we see that is beautiful. And he tells us that with beauty we have the light. That's what Moria says. So when we look around, as Tuya so often says, this great life, you know, she calls it that, as we look around at this great life with all of its amazing variety and possibilities and the sacrifices of those around us, well, you know, we have to feel this great energy, which lights us up and gives us a certain invulnerability. The darkness cannot get through to us. Gratitude and the heart, these are tremendous defenses against the predations of the Black Lodge, the counterforce, the materialistic group. excuse me. So we're gathered here, and there are X number of us, and we're constituting ourselves an instrument for the expression of the light, which dissipates glamour, wrong desire. You know, glamour is all about going after something that's really not worth it. And, you know, the distortion of the vision of what you are pursuing makes you want to have it, but it's not real. So we're trying to establish the essential in our life and pursue what is essential in terms of the divine plan and help other people do the same. We'll just sound the Om. When I get in these big cities, the pollution gets to me. So, anyway, Om Om Om. I hope that's a G. I don't know. I got a very interesting app the other day that tells me exactly what note I'm singing, no matter what. So look, here's our little reading for today, and we're on number 57. Brett, is the audio okay? Are you doing okay with the audio?
We're still breaking up a little bit, unfortunately.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that, and it's just one of those things, but if you want to stick with it, then good, and otherwise, Brett will get this on the what's it called, Makara?
Makara.
As soon as possible, and you can review it, okay? So now we talk about, I think it's a bad place in the house, but when you have a house filled with relatives, you know, it's hard to do a webinar out in the middle of everything. So anyway, this is about a third class of fears, which aspirants contact more and more. Now note this, as they grow in strength and usefulness and service. See, so this is not about, you know, being a beginner. You know, this is when you're well established in your service work and it's growing in power and usefulness. And then this kind of presence can be detected. I have some friends actually who, you know, sometimes have been in the presence of this kind of horrible energy, and they tell me their experience that it's really terrifying, you know. So but we have to be ready and we have to be brave, and there are various expedients that we can use, and not to assume that everything that goes against us, everything that seems inconvenient and problematic and troublesome, is an attack of the Black Lodge. As a matter of fact, it's more the exception than the rule. But one day it happens. So more and more, as they grow in strength and service, usefulness, it's based on the realization that the forces that are working against the plan are trying to hinder or are hindering the work to be done. And of course, by this time, people are really, they're not interested so much in their personal self. They're interested in the work to be done, right? So they have become selfless in that respect, and they've overcome a lot of their own strictly personal fears, and they're not so self-concerned the way the typical aspirant is. The disciple becomes more and more selfless all the time. Let's see, I'm trying to just get this, let's see if that works, yeah. A cult, and now this is a powerful sentence, a cult attacks and a cult powers, warring militantly against the aspirant, especially the useful aspirant, you know, somebody who's really, really in it, and not just self-concerned, will occur. Occult attacks and occult powers warring militantly. Notice the use of the Mars term, and Mars is one of those planets that can easily be used, a non-sacred planet that can easily be used by the counterforce. Warring militantly against the aspirant will occur. Now note, they may make their powers felt in one or other of the vehicles, and in rare cases, where the aspirant is important enough, on all at once. Here's the thing, by the light that you send out, and by the light that is seen on the inner planes, and these are very intelligent beings, and they have real occult abilities, they see the light, they don't want the light. And Master Moria calls them by the name of dark extinguishers. Dark extinguishers. So, you know, this is not to raise fear, but it's just the kind of realism that we have to have about these forces. If we start to imagine that every little thing that goes against us is an occult attack, then we're immersed in glamour ourselves about it. But once in a while, it can occur. Sometimes they will be attacks directed against the individual worker, sometimes against groups of workers. Now, Master DK had a dissipation of glamour group, and there was created a thought form of him. And that thought form gave what is called good words of mediocre cheer. It was false. But people started to believe in it. They started to want to follow this thought form rather than what Master DK was actually doing and saying, because the thought form would compliment them and say, good disciple, you're doing so well, blah, 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 you know. Good words of mediocre cheer, and those who got involved in it basically had their etheric body really, really damaged, and it took him a lot of time to repair all that. So, you know, every once in a while he talks about an attack against his group, which he had to take time off to repair, you know. So, the individual and the group, and when it's an attack against a group, it's even more powerful and more lethal and more obstructive than against the individual. Now he gives us the method, you know. What do? You know, he gives us the method to counter them, to counter these attacks. You follow the first method that we've been dealing with, and about flooding the whole energy system with the light and contacting the soul and contacting the master, but with the following additions and changes. And here's the method. Now, you know, he's going to tell us, don't just start using this method. This is for emergencies, okay? But in order for us to be thorough, we have to study what he says about this method. You link yourself up either as an individual or forming one of a group. So you're either the individual or forming yourself as a member of the group. You link up with your own soul, okay? However you want to visualize that, soul, solar angel, angelic presence, wheel of fire. There's different ways to look at it. And with the lodge of masters, not simply with your own master, as in the earlier case, but with the brotherhood for which you are working. Then, when stillness has been achieved, so you hold it, you know, your own soul, you're one of a group perhaps, or an individual, and then the lodge of masters is being visualized simultaneously as part of a triangle. You visualize those masters of whom you know and raise your vibration higher still. You connect up, if possible, at least, you know, through visualization, with the Chohans, with the Christ, you know, the Chohans, the head of the ashrams, with the Christ and the Manu. And maybe the Maha Chohan would be there too, because he is a Chohan. According to the line, religious or political, with which you may be working, depending on your ray, right? And along which the attack will come. You know, Master DK, being a second ray educational master, the attack probably came against what he was trying to teach. There's so much of that distortion going on right now. Along the second ray line. Then, now this is, okay, you link up, you stabilize, you're visualizing the Chohans, the Christ, the Manu, maybe the Maha Chohan, you're visualizing all this, and your soul, and yourself as a personality. Then pour through the linking chain and through all the vehicles a stream of violet light. That's the, a lot of people make much about this violet light thing, you know. It is a very powerful color, color of the new age, and it has to be used with caution because of the violet devas, basically, that are associated with each of the subplanes of the etheric plane. So then you pour through the linking chain, this is by the power of the creative imagination, through all the vehicles, a stream of violet light. This method is only for use when the need is dire. Now, dire is a strong word. Like you just can't handle it any other way, you know, and you're really, you know, in danger of being overcome by these malevolent forces. So, you know, it's not just an everyday thing, and the necessity is great. The reason for caution lies in the etheric vehicle, which responds most violently to the color violet. Most violently to the color violet. Now, chances are in our whole life, we may never have to use this method. But being on the front lines, and if your service is growing and your effectiveness in the world is growing, and you really sense that whatever's coming at you is coming at you in an unusual and subtle and occult manner, related to the interior powers of intelligent but malevolent forces, this is what you do. Okay? So we just don't know when it is appropriate. You'll have to work out your own discrimination. The idea is study it first and don't just jump into using the most extreme method right away. Use the other methods when fear assails you, or even that creeping feeling of fear that holds you back. He's given us a number of different methods, including thinking things through and the use of the white light and the lining up with the master and the soul. He's given us that we have studied. So you can review this section on a treatise on white magic, and you can find that it will repay your study. With these precautions in mind, as you know, occultism, if you're not cautious in the way of occultism, you're just going to be a dead occultist, you know. There's just so many casualties along the line. And like he says occasionally, many magicians have died doing this, you know. So the keynote is caution, careful study, judicious application of the advice. And obviously, we're going to get better and better at this as the centuries roll along. With these precautions in mind, the fear vibration can be faced and eventually eliminated. Fears fall into two categories for the worker. With most people, it is a combination of the two. Most aspirants have no basic doubt as to the ultimate issue, but they do doubt at times the working out of those issues in the present time. You know, so it's fear of the short-term future, but not of the long-term future, and they shrink back also. Now, note this, and they shrink back also from the path of endeavor, knowing, and rightly knowing, that it leads through trial and loneliness, to the feet of the Hierophant. So, you know, there are just certain things about the way of the lonely ones, and we can reread that wonderful section, which will come upon us. It's an illusion, of course, but you might say a very kind of real seeming illusion. And a lot of people don't want to go through this, okay? They are likewise distressed by the troubles and high vibrations which seem to emanate from high spiritual sources. Strong vibrations will come with ever-increasing frequency, and as the race progresses in evolution, the vibrations will wax stronger, and their reactions must be dealt with in wisdom. You know, there, I was talking to you about this, that Krishnamurti went through a tremendous training to become the vehicle of the Christ. It was an experiment they tried, and for a while, maybe it worked. I don't, you know, it didn't last forever, but he was in agony over the high energies to which he was subjected. So those are called in Agni Yoga, the sacred pains. And they do exist. Now, for most of us, it's not a big issue, but the more sincere we become, the more determined we become to do exactly what it is that needs to be done, these pains, these agonies, this loneliness, all of that, these trials will come upon us. That's just how it is. So tonight, what we've done, at least my tonight, and my, probably for you in Europe and in Australia, New Zealand, it's later in the day, we have looked at this last and final method of banishing one of the most, if I can say, frightening kinds of fear. And we've also been given the caution not just to plunge in and use it. It's got to be real. And then if nothing else works, then we can use that with the caution in the astral, caution, understanding how it can affect the etheric body. And of course, I think the astral body is involved too. So there's more to be said, and we can work on that later, but this would be the end of reading in the Dissipation of Glamour webinar number 57, and this is on this Thanksgiving Day here, at least in the United States. And, well, we'll have to look. I think I maybe, I've got to look at it, maybe traveling. Yeah, I'm precisely traveling on the first of Friday the 1st, and it's probably an evening schedule, which would mean probably I'm going to have to find someone to take this over, and we'll see how that can go. And then, so our next, presumably, we will begin again number 58. And, you know, it could be 1st of December, but maybe not, you know, but maybe cancellation or alternative leader. That's possible, you know, and I can talk to Tuya about that, and we can see maybe what we can do, because I have to fly back to Finland. Okay, that's it. So, we've had some interesting, perhaps, thoughts about real dire conditions, and we've had warnings not to just use such methods lightly. Use the other methods first, and if they don't work, then we plunge into the most extreme of the methods. So what I'm going to do is open this up to you. You know, a lot of people here in Europe and Australia, and if you have anything that you want to say, I have a couple of answers. Olivia's with family, Roswitha, and she told me she couldn't be here. Working on fears, doubts, and worries. All right, these are all things, right? You cast them out. It tells us to cast them out. And of course, it all depends who you think you are. The more you identify as being a soul, the easier it is to throw them out. And one will never know if one's in the right group until one works with it a little bit. And the basic thing is, does Master DK and his teaching, does it have an ongoing appeal to you and fulfill something in your nature that you need? So I just say study, you know, study and meditate, and see how this particular thing will work. The intermittency of sound has been pointed out, and I'm sorry that this is the case, but the other choice was just not doing the program at all. So my apologies for the interruptions. Okay, is there anybody else that would like to offer a thought, have a question? You're welcome to do that at this point. And Tuya, did you have something maybe that you wanted to say? I know we've been discussing this a little bit. Anything about the courage and the dealing with these forces? I'm not saying you have to, but if you do want to, just let me know. Okay. I'm watching the group to see if there's any of you that would like to address any issue that we have in our reading. For me, when I read this at first, long, long ago, I said, wow, this is we're not playing games here. This is a heavy trip. It's a thorny path. It's dangerous in many ways. And one has to be willing to take the risks. And how do you develop fearlessness anyway? And I would just say that Master DK talks about confidence in the inner God, confidence in the inner God, and that will help us develop the fearlessness we need. And I would add to that, as he probably has too, is identification as the inner God. If we think we are the transient personality, it disappears and the fear of impermanence settles down on us. But if we think of our real nature and know ourselves to be the abiding observer, you know, the true soul, and even later the true monad, then we have no longer fears of being annihilated, of being eliminated, because, you know, the soul and its consciousness, the spirit and its consciousness, is forever. And we have to not only know about that theoretically, but we have to be able to experience this as a fact within our consciousness. That's what we have to be able to do, and it takes some time, and if we're determined enough, we will do it. Okay. Well, look, I'm glad they're okay to you. Now we got you. Okay, go ahead, dear.
Do you hear me now?
Very well.
Good morning. Oh, I have tried to get in. It has been a real horrible ordeal. But anyway, I wanted just a quote. It's from the Dwight White Magic, where he says, interestingly, when we think about the path of occultism and when we are starting to, maybe we can even say that we start to disturb some of the layers of those entities. When we are in safely just concentrated upon and focused upon the emotional level, they're seeming to be such an interest from the Black Lords. But when we start to really evolve further on, there the interest comes. And DK says something interesting, that it's from the page 343. I would like to state that there are five things which those who choose the path of occultism need to cultivate, and that the group should specially seek to attain. They are as follows. One, consecration or motive. Two, utter fearlessness. Three, the cultivation of the imagination balanced wisely by the reasoning faculty. Four, a capacity to weigh the evidence wisely and to accept only that which is compatible with the highest instinct and intuition. Five, a willingness to experiment.
What page is that?
So it looks like also that we cannot.
Oh, okay. Hold on just one second. I want to get this under the eye and I realize what went wrong. Okay.
It was white magic, Michael,
Yeah,
not discipleship in the New
no, I
Age.
saw what happened. Okay, I saw what happened. Okay, hold on. Okay, so here are the five
Three,
issues.
four, three.
Yeah, there it is. Excuse me. So there they are in front of us.
And it is interesting when we think about these 5 points, but this utter fearlessness, that it is somehow that we cannot avoid as well, that it this kinds of dangers will come. They will come because we are evolving, and that is disturbing in the web those lower eyes who wants to just keep us, the humanity, in the trap.
Yeah, this utter fearlessness thing, all fear, doubt, and worry have to be eliminated. Utter fearlessness, it can be done. If this can be done, the development of the inner point of contact and the knowledge of how to tap the sources of inspiration will increase in a wonderful manner. So many close to the sources of information through an uncontrolled emotional nature. They close it. They close the sources. The astral body can be controlled. And then this is actually where we began our work talking about this, these methods, inhibition and realization of the issues, and then the use of the white light and so forth. And here is what we've been reading today. So yes, these are very, very important. I guess, you know, it's not just about academic work. It's not even just about meditating. It's really a battle, and we have to be ready for it, and we will be tested in every way. So we got to get used to that, that's all. And maybe our courage is not tremendous yet, but one day it will be. So this is very good material. And, you know, white magic really should be in the hands of everybody. And it's said to be for the control of the astral body, a manual for the control of the astral body. And, you know, it's essential for discipleship, especially in an age when the seventh ray is going to be coming in so powerfully, the magical ray and so forth. There are rules to be followed, things to be done. And the disciple is not only the spontaneous type. The disciple follows the rules. Saturn is the friend of the disciple. So we have to know what the rules are and follow them. That's it, because they lead to success. Okay, thank you, Tuya. Anything else from anybody? Let's see if I have everything. Appreciate your presence. I'm sure that it's just about, a lot of people in the United States are just about wiped out with all they've had to do today, and I'm out here on the West Coast, and it's almost 10 o'clock at night, so it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So I don't expect a whole lot of attendance from South America and from different parts of the United States at this time. But there are some of us who are here, and I am grateful for your presence. Well, look, you know, we'll figure out a way to continue next week. I personally will be traveling, and I have another with Tuya, another webinar on the 2025 group that's run by Alexander Ilchuk. It's a very good group, and we're going to be talking about Sagittarius and the building of the group and Karana. So and then we will continue. Francis Donald will be handling the pre-full moon webinar, because I'll definitely be in the air at that time. So that will be sent to you. And then Tuya will present the broadcast, and we'll send for the actual full moon moment, we'll send that out to you. Things begin to pile up. And I would also like to say the following. The Moria Federation is now starting, I guess it's the 10th year, from 2008 to 2017, so that's 9 years. We're starting our 10th year. And if you want a real deep exposure and test your tenacity, you know, for occultism and learning occultism. I recommend you go to moriafederation@gmail.com, or which one is it? moriafederation.com, and take a look at our website and our applications, and ground yourself deeply in an understanding of occultism while there is a chance to do so and before the next installment comes about. So I'm recommending that if you are not involved in the Moria Federation and you really want to go deep, we have the possibility of doing so. Okay, so sorry about the garbling. We'll do the best we can, and we'll go ahead with the with the meditation. Okay, let's see where we are here. Here it is. Okay. So the first thing we do, you know, we're going to be working with the glamour of fear, and, you know, we can visualize some of these inner forces. We're not necessarily going to think they are attacking us in some way, but we'll try to drive them back, as it were. We'll contribute our energy to the driving back of these forces off the etheric plane and back to their place on the astral plane, where eventually they will be eliminated. Okay. So in the silence, we hold our silence and come together in the synthesis which silence makes possible. So we render ourselves as an instrument, a group instrument, for the dissipation of glamour, especially here, the glamour of fear and the glamour of fear of the occult forces which can attack the aspirant or the group. Now we're going to make our divine cross, and you know how that goes. It's your forehead, your chest, your left eye, your right eye. And then as you do that, you see the light pouring forth from that cross, the cross of divinity. It's our protection. A needed protection. So I'll have to show this. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. See the light radiating from this cross of divinity. And then we go through the preparatory stages, making three lights into one. We draw up the light of matter onto the lower mental plane, and there we also visualize the light of lower mind, the reasoning, thinking mind. And we merge these two lights, and we meditate for a moment on soul contact, the recognition of soul light. Whether you want to use the white light or the golden light, you know, probably at this point, either one will do. The light of the soul, very real, visualized above the head, within the egoic lotus causal body. And then we bring the soul light by an act of the creative imagination also down onto the lower mental plane and merge it with the light of matter and the light of lower mind, which are already merged as a dual. So here comes the soul light to join the other two lights. And the triple light is now a combination of the light of matter, the light of mind, and the light of the soul. And we visualize this, all focused on that part of mind that we can control, which is the lower mind. And then we're going to say together this number four, followed by the Om three times. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Oh. So we can use this light to penetrate into even deeper light, and we can use the triple light as one to deal with the darkness found upon the astral plane and which blocks and distorts the realization of truth. Now the formula. And as we visualize the formula, excuse me, as we pronounce it, we will visualize the searchlight that we have created. We'll turn it on and turn it on to the astral plane. as we imagine it to be. The many individual searchlights form one great searchlight coming out of the group. And so here we go with the formula. Radiance are we, and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. The light of day is the light of the intuition. It's a scorpionic light associated with the Buddhic plane. We need a real lightening of the astral plane so that we are no longer enfolded by the clouds and miasmas, the general blanket effect on the astral plane, which prevents us from seeing things as they are. So our searchlight is out there, as it were, on the astral plane, not really in the astral body of any one of us. It's more on the astral plane per se. And visualizing the group searchlight, it's a weapon, it's a point of revelation, it's like the horn of the unicorn. And we're going to work with it. So we're going to strengthen our beam through the invocation of spiritual will. Spiritual will coming from the monad and from the atmic plane, really, and working its way down through the soul body and into the different parts of the personality and into the head center and touching the base of the spine and ultimately stimulating the central diamond of each chakra in the etheric body. Okay. So, here's what we say: to strengthen with spiritual will the beam we have created. With power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. Now, we get into the words of power. We're going to name our glamour, an aspect of the glamour of fear, and we're going to see this glamour being penetrated by our beam, our will strengthened beam, and that penetration is going to produce the scattering, the dissipation of the glamour. That's what's going to happen. So here we go. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear, especially as related to occult attacks. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of fear, fear of occult attacks, from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of fear in relation to occult attacks. Now our beam is strong, we're all contributing to it, and each one of us can imaginatively wield the beam as we see fit in confronting an aspect of this major glamour, the glamour of fear, the major glamour found upon our planet as a whole. So, let us have our 5 minutes of silence as we work dissipating these glamours and seeing the great sun of clarity and fearlessness shine upon the astral plane. We'll get into that now. 5 minutes of silence as we work with intensity of purpose. Okay. So we're in the position now where we have been seeing a condition of fearlessness, the clarification of the astral plane with respect to fear, and especially this fear of occult attacks and so forth, the fear generated thereby. And we have done some work. And each one of us should be perhaps a little less timorous, a little less afraid of what the counterforce can do, you know, when we stick our necks out individually and together to bring in the light. So we're going to withdraw our beam of light back onto the mental plane. We turn off that searchlight for now. Ready to work again to help clarify in this very glamorously tending psyche of humanity, to help clarify the astral plane so that the truth can make its way through without the usual distortions. So let us sound the triple ohm, realizing that work has been done. We are grateful on this Thanksgiving Day, you know, generalizing the idea that we have the privilege of doing this work. We are grateful to have the privilege of cooperating with the hierarchy. And we persist in the occult work because it is needed, and the attacks on humanity, really, very subtle, must not be allowed to prevail. So let us sound the ohm three times, realizing that work has been done not only in the astral body, but as the astral body affects the etheric, and as it also blends with the mind in Kama Manas, there has been some success in seeing the sun of fearlessness shine forth. Friends, we have more work coming up. Tuya will be leading the Soul of Nations meditation at the morning hour on Saturday, and at the morning hour on Sunday, the attracting of money for hierarchical purposes. We'll let you know about our schedule for the full moons. We'll send that out to you. I believe, Brett, I wonder if you can, let's see, are we coming up on the 3rd, is that it, for the greater, for the broadcast, which includes the exact full moon, is that it?
We have the full moon on the 3rd, yes.
At what time does it show? Or does it show?
don't know.
Anyway, we'll get that to you. We'll get that to you.
Yeah.
And we're
working on it.
We'll get that to you. Okay. Thank you very much for attending this meditation. We persist, and sorry for the quality of sound, but then I think that in the recording that is being made here in my station, it will be very solid and not garbled. If you care to review any of it, and let us continue our interior work, knowing that we will only be strengthened as we go along, and more effective in this work all the time. So many blessings to everybody, and we'll get out the, let's see, if I did this about that. Okay. Let's see, where are we here? Okay. I'm trying to find that charts are available. Yes. And let's take a look over here. And these are the lunar phases. And this is the Phoenix time. We'll have to add 7 hours. So it's December 3rd. Add 7 hours. It's going to be 15:46, 3:46, and 54 seconds in the afternoon. And probably we'll let you know when Tuya will begin, at least an hour before that. So at least, I would say like 2:30 or something in the afternoon GMT, something of that nature. We will let you know. Okay, thank you for your attendance. And we'll be in touch with you. Let's keep working on the inside to help the situation on the outside. And so my lion friend and I, and Tuya, and Livy, who can't be here tonight, we wish you all the very best. And Brett and Joe and BL, everyone on the technical side, supporting the whole effort. Very best to you, and may the spirit of gratitude and thanksgiving pour over the earth. It's an American holiday, but, you know, gratitude is never out of place. Okay, lots of love. See you, and all the best.